Ever wondered how like a simple police pat down can turn into a, like a huge Fourth Amendment debate?
Yeah.
Well, today we're going deep into State of Tennessee v. Ray Anthony Bridges.
Ooh.
A 1997 Tennessee Supreme Court case.
Okay.
That really breaks down this thing called the Plainfield Doctrine.
I like it.
You guys, as law students, flag this case.
Yeah.
And we're here to like uncover the lessons it has for search and seizure.
Cool. So this case is a great example of how the courts try to balance effective law enforcement with, you know, protecting individual rights.
Right.
You know, those liberties in the Fourth Amendment?
Yeah.
It's a cool look at how those constitutional principles actually work in practice.
Okay, so let's set the scene.
Okay.
December 1993.
Right.
A confidential informant
with
a really solid track record. And this is important.
Okay.
They had given information before that led to a cocaine conviction.
All right.
Tells Paris police officer D.W. Blackwell that a guy named Ray Anthony Bridges is selling crack cocaine at a club called Preacher's.
Got it.
The informant also says Bridges is carrying drugs and cash.
Okay, so that proven reliability of the informant is really important.
Right.
It gives some initial justification for what the officer does.
Yeah.
It's not just some random tip. There's a history there that suggests the information is probably accurate.
Exactly. And Officer Blackwell wasn't going in blind here.
Right.
He knew about Bridges' past, including a felony assault conviction.
Okay.
And a recent armed situation with the police.
Oh, wow.
So about 30 minutes after getting the tip, Blackwell goes to Preacher's and he sees Bridges sitting at a table.
So you see how these different pieces of information start to add up.
Yeah.
The informant's tip puts Bridges at a specific place.
Right.
And the officer's knowledge about Bridges makes it seem more likely that something illegal might be happening.
Uh-huh.
The key thing here for you guys is how law enforcement builds what's called reasonable suspicion. They need enough to justify taking action.
Okay, so Blackwell goes up to Bridges, asks him to stand up and face the wall.
Okay.
And does a pat down.
Uh-huh.
He said it was for his safety, given Bridges' history with weapons.
Makes sense.
During the pat-down, he feels something small in Bridges' jacket pocket and figures out it's a pill bottle.
Okay.
The kind he, based on his experience, connects with crack cocaine dealers.
Interesting.
So he reaches in, pulls it out, and yep, it's got crack cocaine in it.
Wow.
He also finds a knife in Bridges' pants pocket.
And this is where the legal stuff really gets going.
Yeah.
You have the stop and the frisk, which is one thing, but then taking that pill bottle.
Right.
That's where the big legal argument comes in.
Yeah.
It brings in the Fourth Amendment's protection against unreasonable searches and seizures.
So Bridges gets charged with possession with intent to sell and tries to get the evidence thrown out, arguing the search was illegal.
Right.
The trial court says no.
Okay.
The Court of Criminal Appeals agrees.
Uh-huh.
But then the Tennessee Supreme Court comes in and totally reverses those decisions.
Wow, a reversal. That's a big deal.
It is. And what's really interesting for you guys is why the highest court in the state disagreed with the lower courts.
Yeah, what made them see it so differently?
Exactly.
The Tennessee Supreme Court's reversal came down to a really fundamental difference in Fourth Amendment law.
Okay.
It's the difference between reasonable suspicion, which we touched on earlier,
right,
that allows a quick stop and a pat down for weapons under Terry v. Ohio, and probable cause,
right,
which is a much higher bar needed for a full search or to seize evidence.
Got it.
The court agreed that Officer Blackwell probably had reasonable suspicion to do the stop and frisk.
Okay, let's break that down for a sec. Reasonable suspicion. What does that actually mean for a police officer in a situation like this?
Think of reasonable suspicion as like an experienced officer's hunch that something criminal is going on.
Okay.
But it has to be based on facts they can explain, not just a gut feeling.
Got it.
So in this case, you have the reliable informant giving a detailed tip about drug dealing.
Right.
They say it's Bridges at a specific location.
Uh-huh.
Then you add in Officer Blackwell's knowledge of Bridges' criminal history.
Yeah.
All of that together gives those specific articulable facts.
Okay.
Enough for a careful officer to believe Bridges might be armed and involved in something illegal.
So it's not just a feeling. There needs to be actual information pointing towards possible criminal activity.
Right. It has to be something concrete.
So pat down for weapons, that's considered okay under Terry.
Yep.
Because of that reasonable suspicion about safety.
Makes sense.
But the moment he felt that pill bottle and reached in, That's when things went wrong.
Right.
Exactly.
Why was taking the pill bottle considered unconstitutional?
Well, that brings us to the plain feel doctrine.
Okay.
It comes from the Supreme Court case Minnesota v. Dickerson.
Got it.
This doctrine is a narrow exception to needing a warrant. It says that if an officer is doing a legal pat down for weapons,
right,
and feels something that's obviously contraband just by its shape or texture,
uh-huh,
they can take it.
Okay.
But the really important part here is immediately apparent.
Right.
It's not enough for the officer to just feel something suspicious.
Yeah.
The object has to clearly be something illegal just by touching it.
So the Tennessee Supreme Court's view was that feeling a pill bottle doesn't meet that immediately apparent standard for contraband.
Exactly.
Okay.
Their reasoning was that pill bottles aren't illegal things in themselves.
Right. They're used for all sorts of stuff.
They could be for prescription meds, vitamins, or even just holding small things.
Yeah.
So just feeling the shape of a pill bottle, even if the officer knows drug dealers often use them,
mm-hmm,
doesn't automatically mean there's probable cause to believe it has illegal drugs in it.
Okay.
There has to be something more specific about what they felt.
And here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay, what's that?
The court specifically said that an officer's personal belief, even if they have years of experience and link pill bottles with drug dealing, that belief alone isn't enough to establish probable cause.
Right. It's not about what one officer thinks.
Yeah.
The standard for probable cause has to be objective.
Okay.
It's about whether a reasonable person, looking at all the facts the officer knew at the time,
right,
would have had a good reason to believe the object was contraband.
Right.
The Tennessee Supreme Court said just feeling a pill bottle didn't meet that objective standard.
Now, it's important to remember this wasn't a unanimous decision.
Oh, okay.
We had Justices Drouota and Reed disagreeing, and their arguments show how complex this can be and how there can be different but valid ways to interpret the law.
Makes sense, yeah.
Justice Drouota agreed that the initial stop was justified.
Okay.
But said that the informant's tip, specifically the part about Bridges carrying drugs, combined with the officer's experience recognizing the pill bottle as something often used for crack cocaine, did mean there was probable cause.
So he felt that the context from the informant's tip was really important.
Exactly.
He was saying that knowing Bridges was likely selling and carrying drugs, plus the officer recognizing the container, mm-hmm, was enough for a reasonable officer to believe the pill bottle probably had drugs in it.
So even with the same facts, you can have experienced legal minds coming to different conclusions on whether there was enough for probable cause.
Yeah, it's not always a clear-cut answer.
And then there was Justice Reed, who was even more critical.
Oh, wow.
He even questioned if the initial stop and frisk were constitutional at all.
Interesting.
So his dissent brought up concerns about the specifics of the information from the confidential informant,
mm-hmm,
and how recent it was.
Okay.
He said the tip didn't say when Bridges would be at the club or how the informant knew he'd be carrying drugs then.
I see.
Without that immediacy and a clear basis for the informant's knowledge, Justice Reed argued there weren't enough solid facts to even justify the Terry stop in the first place.
So he's saying the informant needed to have more specific, up-to-date information.
Right, which emphasizes how important the reliability and details of an informant's tip are for establishing reasonable suspicion.
Absolutely.
It's a good reminder that every part of a police encounter can be examined legally.
Definitely. It's all under scrutiny.
So for you future lawyers,
what
are the big takeaways from State v. Bridges? What should you really remember?
Well, there are a few key things it shows.
Okay.
First, it highlights the difference between reasonable suspicion and probable cause.
Right.
Reasonable suspicion is that lower bar that lets an officer do a brief stop and a pat down for weapons.
Okay.
They need to reasonably believe that someone is armed and dangerous and might be involved in criminal activity.
Got it.
Probable cause is a much higher standard.
Yeah.
It requires a fair probability that something is contraband. Or that a crime's been committed.
Uh-huh.
And it's needed to actually see something under the plain feel doctrine.
Right. The reliable tip and Bridges' criminal history provided the reasonable suspicion for that initial pat down, but probable cause to take what turned out to be drugs wasn't there when he first felt the pill bottle.
Right. It wasn't immediately obvious what was in there.
Exactly.
Second, the case shows that the immediately apparent standard of the plain feel doctrine is strict.
Yeah.
The officer has to know right away that the object is contraband just by touching it.
Okay.
They can't squeeze it, slide it around, or do anything else to figure out what's inside.
Right.
That goes beyond a legal frisk for weapons and isn't allowed under this exception.
So in Bridges, just feeling the shape of a pill bottle wasn't enough to immediately and clearly identify it as contraband.
Exactly.
And third, those dissenting opinions show that these Fourth Amendment issues often depend heavily on the specific facts of the case.
Mm.
And even experienced judges on the highest court can have different but reasonable interpretations of the law.
Yeah, it's rarely simple.
It's not always black and white.
Right. The different opinions from the judges show how tough it is to apply these broad constitutional principles to what actually happens in real-life police encounters.
Yeah.
It takes a careful look at all the details and weighing different legal arguments.
To sum up Bridges for you guys.
Okay.
While the initial stop and frisk were probably okay based on reasonable suspicion,
uh-huh.
taking the pill bottle was unconstitutional.
Right.
The plain field doctrine says that what an officer feels during a legal frisk has to clearly be contraband to allow them to seize it.
Yeah.
And a pill bottle on its own doesn't usually meet that standard.
Right.
Because it can be used for legal stuff.
Makes sense.
And importantly, an officer's hunch, even if it's based on experience, isn't enough for probable cause.
That's a key point.
And lastly, those dissenting opinions highlight how fact-specific and debatable these Fourth Amendment applications can be.
It's all about context.
What's really interesting about this case is how the court dealt with the uncertainty of what the officer felt.
Right.
The fact that a pill bottle isn't automatically illegal was super important to their decision.
Yeah. That ambiguity played a big role.
Here's something to think about.
Okay.
The court said a pee bottle itself isn't illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But what if, during a legal pat-down, an officer felt not just one pill bottle, but a bunch of small, individually wrapped baggies?
Interesting.
Would that, knowing how drugs are often packaged, change things in terms of immediately apparent?
That's a great question.
This case really makes us think about how specific facts and what an officer feels connect with Fourth Amendment protections.
Yeah.
It makes you think about how sure an officer needs to be just based on touch before they can take something without a warrant.
That's a really important issue. It gets right to the core of the immediately apparent standard.
Right.
Feeling multiple baggies like that would probably make a much stronger case for probable cause. It's way less ambiguous than a pill bottle.
Yeah.
And it's more in line with how drugs are often packaged.
Right.
So it's more likely a reasonable officer would know right away that it was contraband.
So for those of you who want to dig deeper,
yeah.
I definitely recommend checking out other Plainfield cases
mm-hmm.
and seeing how different courts have interpreted that immediately apparent standard in various situations.
Good idea.
Also, learning more about how reliable informants are and the totality of the circumstances test
right.
in Fourth Amendment law will definitely help you understand this complex and crucial area of law better.
Absolutely. It's fascinating stuff.
It really is.